Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, we're in the downstairs dungeon of this guy looking at how to configure audio consoles for a major installation. It's all coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, keeping you connected with your community with support and webinars, online at nautel.com/webinars. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. This week, we are on location coming to you from, well, I'll tell you in a few minutes. I'm Kirk Harnack, the host of the show. This Week in Radio Tech is a show we've been doing for over 10 years now, and this is episode 502. I work for the Telos Alliance, so sometimes you'll hear me talking about technology as the Telos Alliance presents it to the industry and some gear, and that's what I'm familiar with. But we try to talk about all kinds of technology on the show, technology that impacts you and me as broadcast engineers. Chris Tobin normally is with us. He had a last-minute thing he had to do. He said, oh, it's such a mess, I got to go fix all kinds of stuff. So anyway, Chris, good luck to you at your radio station, and I think you're doing some TV today. Whatever it is, good luck, and we'll go ahead and carry on without you. Let me go ahead and introduce my guest, and then I've got an announcement about Nautel that I want to tell you about. Bill Jackson is my guest. Hello, Bill. Good to see you.
It's so good to see you, friend.
You have a pretty cool job with the folks at EMF, the Educational Media Foundation. But yep. Most of us better know by the on-air brand names.
Yeah, K-Love, Air One, a new podcast network called Access More. And then there are some other things that we do that are a little less known, but it's all about furthering our consumers' walk with Christ. Mm-hmm. Is we're a ministry,
yeah,
a radio ministry, a podcast ministry. That's what we do.
And what you do in relation to that, well, you used to be the regional studio engineer, right?
Regional broadcast studio engineer. Yeah.
And you got expanded.
I got expanded. I now became the principal studio engineer. So be good in class.
Well, that's probably better than the assistant principal.
Yeah, that's true. But I maintain and design and construct studio facilities and audio paths to our media delivery department. Okay. We're set up different than a typical radio station.
Yeah, because you just mentioned media delivery department. Yeah, we'll get to that later on. We'll talk first about the content creation.
Right. Yeah. So content creation, if it makes noise or pictures, we deliver it over IP. Okay? In a nutshell, that's what we do. That's our studio technology department, hence the principal studio engineer. And then we hand that to a media delivery department, who hands that to an engineering department to do it at a normal transmitter site.
We're going to get into all this on this show. We're also going to look at all around us here, and we'll get some closer camera shots, but all around us here, we got audio consoles here. You want them, you can see right here. This is a big new what?
Quasar. Axia Quasar.
Wow. You know, I actually don't get to see this very often.
Sorry about that. It makes acres of coleslaw. I mean, it's solid.
We're going to talk about this Axia Quasar, and importantly, we're going to talk about AOIP technology and how that has enabled your organization to do things that you probably didn't imagine when you first bought AOIP technology.
Yeah, it's really made workflows simpler. It's made things less complicated to troubleshoot and deal with. Uh-huh. And it's also, in the long term, it's also more cost conscious. And that's important for a ministry.
Well, that's coming up. We're going to look at these consoles, talk about how AOIP is helping EMF deliver audio to people through various different means, not just on the radio. And we'll look at that and more coming up. Hey, I want to remind you about Nautel and the webinars that they are doing. They've been doing for over a month now and all through the month of July as well. Let me get my notes here. Nautel and namely Jeff Welton. You know, Jeff, we're having a lot of fun with these interactive discussions and inviting your input and questions. Look out for Tuesday, July 21st. That is, 5 days from now? Tuesday, July 21st at 12 noon Eastern time is the next Transmission Talk Tuesday. It's a roundtable discussion and it's going to be about audio processing. Now, folks are interested in audio processing. There's a lot of opinions out there, a lot of subjectivity, and it's sure to be a pretty lively discussion. The session will discuss products, techniques, and best practices to help improve the quality of your sound right from the microphone all the way to the antenna. Special guests coming up on the Transmission Talk Tuesday from Nautel. So be sure you register. Here's how you register. Go to Nautel.com/webinars. Nautel.com/webinars. Register for your invitation. You'll get a link in the email for your link to join that roundtable discussion. And again, being a roundtable discussion, you get to pose questions to Jeff and his guests about audio processing next week. Now, this past week, by the way, this week on Tuesday, it was about grounding, and Alex Hartman was on there. What a terrific show that was. I really enjoyed it, and next week's is sure to be good, too, about audio processing. Thanks, Nautel, and remember the website, nautel.com/webinars. All right, here with Bill Jackson, and Bill, we're in a pretty interesting location. This doesn't look all that glamorous. Where are we?
We're in the dungeon. Yes. We're in the basement of a building in Franklin, Tennessee. And it's a recently acquired space so that a construction of two new on-air control rooms upstairs mm-hmm. happens. While that construction is going on, I'm able to pre-configure consoles, pre-configure devices, so that when construction is ready, it's plug and play, set some mic processing. Actually, I'll set it down here, but we'll tweak it in the studio because this environment is pretty live. And that's, you know, outside of maybe Pathfinder configuring to do branding in the studio. Mm-hmm. They press a button and we're ready to go. So literally a studio can be up in a couple, 3 days, as opposed to me doing it when construction goes on and spending a whole lot more time by myself doing one studio, and then we'll do the next one, and then we'll do the next one. Mm-hmm. Everything will be pre-configured when it's ready, when the construction is done.
A little bit later on the show, we're going to take a closer look at the gear you have here and the stuff you have set up for pre-configuring. Right now, though, I'd like to understand a bit more about K-Love and Air One. I thought you guys were out in California, and yet here you are in Franklin, Tennessee. What's going on with that?
Okay, so we've always had our home office, our headquarters, in Rockland, California. Okay. Our morning shows have always broadcast from Indianapolis. It's what we call our BDSR facility. If an unfortunate earthquake or fire were to break out in California, mm-hmm. we're able to send to the 800 terrestrial signals and push to the streaming platforms all of Indianapolis. Then you have the epicenter of Christian music that exists in Nashville.
That's right. We have all these.
It's not just country music.
Right. All these Christian artists are
correct.
Here too.
Jeremy Camp and Chris Tomlin, everybody's based here. Yeah. And so this is a great place for us to be, to actually have studios in order to acquire content. That content could be for on air, it could be for podcast, it could be for social media, what have you. All of that is able to be acquired at this facility. We started building this facility back in 2017. We finished two on air control rooms and a full recording studio. And then now we're expanding. We've eliminated one of those two control rooms because we needed to get from the current space we have through to the new one. And we're building two new on-air control rooms, two morning show producer booths, and two Pro Tools suites to be able to edit content. So,
and those aren't built yet, but they're under construction.
No, that's what this is for.
Okay. So one thing I wanted to ask you about why you are broadcasting from Indianapolis. And you told me over coffee or lunch a couple of months back, you reminded me about time zones and that certainly a large amount of your audience is on the East Coast.
Depends on the brand.
Okay.
So if you look at K-Love, for instance, mm-hmm. it has more stations that it's in 49 of the 50 states, I think. Mm-hmm. That could change, but I think it's in 49 of the 50. And I want to say 3/4 of those, the weight, it's pretty evenly distributed, but may tilt a little more towards the East Coast, okay. where Air One tends to tilt more towards the West Coast.
Okay.
That then you have the fact that a morning show would be arriving at the studio here at 3 a.m. in California for the 6 a.m. in New York.
Yeah.
Right?
Is that a husband-wife team?
Air One it is.
Air One it is, okay.
But K-Love is not. Skip and Amy, they were in Indianapolis, but we've got on Air One, we've got Dan and Michelle, and Dan and Michelle are on the West Coast, so they get extra early for the stations that are on the East Coast.
Wow.
So we're split, but we're going to have the ability that if we have an event, so K-Love puts on a Fan Awards event, okay, up in May. We can have all the jocks come from California and do their shows in their real time slots, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because it's these are going to be extensions of the studios in California. We can get into that more later too. That's a little technical,
but okay. So you're building several studios here. Mm-hmm. So two main ones, plus you'll have the existing one?
Yes, we'll have three on-air control rooms.
Okay.
Right.
And two producer rooms.
Be two kiosk audio producer, Pro Tool suites.
Okay.
And then two morning show producer rooms.
Now, these morning show producer rooms, you mentioned that you're actually going to have small audio consoles in those rooms too.
No, there'll be small versions of Quasar. There'll be eight-channel Quasars in those rooms.
Okay. Wow. Wow.
Okay. You're saying, why? Well, that sounds like overkill. Yeah, it sort of does. But if you think about it in reality, it's really not. And I'll explain why. One, you're creating a standard in your facility. And for us, it's a standard for our ministry. This is what we're going to build everything on for the future. Mm-hmm. That's our standard. Number two, if perhaps I have something unforeseen, and I've never had this happen, but let's say unforeseen that on a Quasar, the map happens to go back.
Yeah.
I'll grab one from a morning show producer room, re-IP it, and stick it in here.
Gotcha.
Because it's the same piece of equipment, and it's IP-based.
Gotcha.
Okay? It's redundancy and failover that's normally I would build two of the same studio. Well, I don't have to do that anymore. I can be more cost-conscious with, in particular, our case, their donor dollars. People freely give money to us so that we can do what we do and help further a listener's walk with Christ. Well, we need to be extra prudent with those dollars.
Yeah.
And that's why we create standards and we do things the right way. We don't want to be frivolous. We also don't want to be cheap. We want great gear because it's going
to
last.
Talk to me a little bit about the facility in Rockland, California. Now, it seems like I got to visit there, oh gosh, 10, 12 years ago there. It may have even been before you had any AOIP, audio over IP gear there. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the studios in Rockland and they're in terms of the technology.
So Rockland, California has four on-air control rooms. They are all Power Station Aux, Fusion console based.
Okay, so these are all Axia audio over IP consoles.
Audio over IP, yes. Okay. Our ministry standard is we're going to use LiveWire plus AS67.
Yeah.
Okay. There are production rooms. I think there are 16 production rooms that largely reside on Pro Tools. That's the standard we've set that we're going to do audio production and video production on in those rooms.
Oh, you guys have a fair amount of video going on,
yes.
Too.
Okay. Yes, because this is about content. It's not about one type of thing. This isn't just radio for us. This is much bigger than that. So when we create standards of how we're going to do things, we want those standards to be at a level that is worthy of our brands.
Okay.
So we've got those. We've got purpose rooms, almost like a producer room, and those are IQ based.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
So it's still AOIP, audio
still
IP.
AOIP.
Plugs right in the network, talks to everything else.
Sure does. Okay. Cisco switching infrastructure,
yeah.
At hands off to, particularly in the broadcast side, when we hand off AOIP as AES67 to a Pico head end, and it's uplinked to affiliates.
Hey, we're going to take a break right now and mention the company that helps make our broadcast possible. And we're going to do it because we got some of their gear right here. And that is from Angry Audio. Why don't you, my hands are kind of full here. Why don't you pick that puppy up there and we'll take a look at this. This is a Mic Tally Gizmo. What is that?
Mic Tally Gizmo is a cool device that Catfish came up with. And it's a 5-pin XLR input to a 3-pin XLR output.
Well, all it does is remove two pins.
It removes two pins, but lets you set your Yellowtech Mika light to turn on and off, and then apply 15 volts DC power to it, and it gives you the 12 volts that you need in order to power your Mika light.
Okay.
Now, you could do this one of 100 different ways. when we decided we wanted to implement Mika as our standard for our mic booms with the little lights, we said we would take the output, the two pins, and drive those to a 66 block and apply power to the 66 block and then use Pathfinder to switch it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
We're doing something different. We decided to go with this option, and I've been really pleased with the way that they work.
So the five pins, that's the standard that is used in the Mika arm.
Correct.
Okay, so
balanced audio, three pins, yeah, and two pins that are your DC voltage to power your light.
There's another, this one again is called the Mic Tally Gizmo. It doesn't have any mic amplification there, and there's no headphone in that. Well, could you pick up this other little box?
Yeah.
Got one a little bit larger, and it's called the Guest Gizmo. Do you know much about this one?
A little bit. This, the idea here, I believe, was that we plug our headphones in,
yeah,
and this acts as, I believe, your cough button.
Yes.
Interrupt or the audio, button, right?
Yeah.
And you control your headphone
so
volume here.
Got a headphone amp built into it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Gotcha.
And that's your cough button for your microphone, I do believe.
So you could use these two in combo,
mm-hmm,
to light the tally light and to give the. But yeah, there's different ways to get the. Different ways to skin this cat, aren't there?
Yes.
Now, you've also got a headphone amp over there yonder way. It's the one that I've been showing on the show quite a bit. That is
this thing.
Well, I like this one because with this one, I won't snag my pantyhose on it.
Let me tell you why I love this one.
Right.
Because there's like no noise floor whatsoever.
So let's show
it. It
let's
is
show,
silent.
Oh, okay.
Mount this under your desk, plug your headphones into it, and we set the headphone volume at about 1 p.m.
Yeah.
And then we have, we'll have Quasar's desk controller that'll actually control the volume.
Yeah, sure.
But this is the output and fits with the,
Studio Hub.
Studio Hub standard.
Yeah.
I mean, can get power from the Studio Hub PS cubes. It's a great device.
All right, cool. Those are from Angry Audio, angryaudio.com. And Angry Audio happens to be based right here,
in Franklin,
Tennessee. That's right. So check him out. And obviously you're using a fair amount of Angry Audio gear here.
Yeah. Catfish is actually creating, I don't want to talk about it very much, but he's actually creating a custom box for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
That revolves around this.
The tally gizmo.
We hope that it'll be something that other engineers will be interested in. So it's just a little different way of accomplishing it.
So back to audio over IP, I get the impression that 12 years ago, when EMF decided to go with audio over IP and Livewire in Rockland, California, you didn't at the time have plans of coming to Franklin, Tennessee. You didn't have plans of doing the things with AOIP that you're going to be doing, which we'll get into a bit more in the show. You got plans to connect different cities together.
Correct.
That's cool.
There was a lot of thought, a lot of discussion, a lot of prayer that went into what infrastructure we were going to build out. Mm-hmm. And when the decision was made to go from an analog infrastructure to a digital infrastructure, we looked at several things. And by the way, and by we, I'm talking the studio technology department, the media delivery department, the engineers, everybody got together. Oh, the IT department. Okay. And we looked at what was available now. What could we do in the future, and how could we maximize our investment into this technology? And at the end of the day, we ended up deciding that for the ministry, Axia was the way to go, and to use Livewire Plus and AES67 together.
Yeah, which came along a few years later. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So it was a great decision. We've never looked back. We've never had any issues with that. And at that inception, and I have to give credit where credit is due, because I wasn't even in that department at the time. Okay,
where were you at that time?
I was actually the network promotions director.
Promotions?
I'm a talent promotions guy.
And this is so amazing, because you're doing all this network and this engineer stuff, and yet you started out in being on the air.
On the air, yeah. And well, it provides a different perspective, too, because I understand what a jock thinks. I understand what they do.
Yeah.
We've done TV. I understand. I get framing shots. I get what lighting is supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
And that, being able to take that knowledge and use it as a tool in the toolbox in order to craft these things, design these things so that the talent feel comfortable. They don't have to think about the button that they're pushing. It's just there and it just works.
Yeah.
And it works in their workflow. Because, you know, you're a talent. You think, okay, I got to think of how what I'm saying, what I'm saying. I've got to read what the piece of copy is. I've got to know what I've just finished, what I've got to do next. There's 5, 6, 10 things that a jock thinks about while they're on the microphone. Let's eliminate as much as that can for them. Let's let them be them. Let's let them do the job. Let's let them get the message out and provide them tools that they don't have to think about. Designing that, then you got a win-win for everybody.
Gotcha. And the studios that I've seen certainly follow that approach where it looks like you've built them or people before you also built them such that the jock has a great deal of assurance. They push this button, it's going to do what they think it's going to do. And it's going to do it maybe with just one button.
Yeah. In a former life, I was blessed to be able to learn to write Crestron panels.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Crestron touchscreens
and
the control rooms.
Yeah.
And to go to Crestron school and then teach panel design and that if it takes more than 3 touches to do something, simplify it.
Yeah.
You know, it's little things like that in UI design. UI design directly translates to what we do here. And it creates some opportunities for us to try some things that are literal out of the box. And that's what we're blessed to be able to do down here in the dungeon.
Well, let's see if we can move over to this console here and maybe get a little bit of tour of this thing. So, and Suncast, I'm not sure if you can put the other camera on. Now, Bill, I'm going to you to give us a little tour of this console. And, you know, even though I work for the company that makes these, Axia, I get to see them at trade shows and once in a while when I'm at the company headquarters, but I don't have one of these at home yet.
You're missing out.
I know. And you've got 3 in this room. So tell me a little bit about what this console does.
Okay. If you're a current Axia user and you're based on Element or you're based on Fusion, your frame comes a little differently. The console frames are done in what they called 1.5U, 2.5U, 3.5U, where a unit is a 4-frame module, but your master module that houses your touch everything that's touchscreen is 1.5U's. So when you order your frame, whether it's a desktop frame or there is a new a flush mount frame, and there's also you can mount these modules directly in furniture now too. They'll make a trim piece for that that'll come out relatively soon. You order it such to the frames that you're going to need. So when we did the design, we built a 20 modules or 5 frames plus the mask. And I said, in case we need one later on, let's add another one. So this is a 7.5U frame. 1, 2, 3.5, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. 7.5U frame. Additional power supplies. There's 4 power supplies. So we have plenty of redundancy. The back has access here to be able to directly attach nodes and broadcast really without a switch. And then this is connection to your AOIP network.
And of these power supplies, you've got 4 of them in here, but 2 are connected.
Only 2 are connected right now.
Shown by the status light here on the very back.
Correct. Once these go in the studios, they'll get all 4 applied.
Okay.
For now, I'm trying to config and pre-config. If I lose a power supply, I'm going to know, and I've got a spare. So
it looks like each of these modules has its own IP address. Is that right?
Correct. The entire system is IP-based. And depending on how you build your Livewire network, that becomes real important. So Axia has a recommendation of how they how you should frame out your IP, and the Livewire IDs are a derivative of the IP address. Mm-hmm. We did that, okay? We tweaked it a little bit, but then when it came time for Fusion, it broke the model, okay? Because there's so many more IPs. So we had to do some serious thinking and some serious talking to still keep that model, but break things out P. And each one of these modules, the fader modules and the master module, all get an IP address, but they use no Livewire IDs. And that's important.
Okay.
The Quasar engine uses all of the IPs. Okay? Because this is where your your audio in and out is getting directed. Your nodes are now your in and out.
Yeah.
So it's like the old Element days when you had the mix engine and you used the nodes in and out. That's what we're doing again. It's these are two mic nodes. This is a AES node. This is a GPIO node, and this is an analog node.
Okay.
And this is my in and out for one studio.
Gotcha. So that's all the IOs for one studio right there. Okay. And that now that mix engine, that looks like it might have some fans in it. That doesn't go in the studio, does it?
Doesn't go in the studio. This goes in your technical room.
Okay.
And that then presents a unique challenge for us because when we did our LiveWire scheme, anything that went in a technical room has its own set of IP addresses.
Okay. So it messed up your scheme a bit.
It broke the scheme.
Okay.
So we had to say, okay, the engines are going to go in that room, but because it's driving studio stuff,
yeah.
We're going to IP it like it's in the room. And it's going to be the brain, so it's going to get dot one.
That's what I do. If no matter where the location is, I've always associated the IP address with the functionality.
Yeah.
So if it's the mix engine for Studio A and Studio A is a dot three or whatever it may be, then that's what I give it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you can imagine the quandary. Okay, well, we have this and it works for this, but now we've broken it. So what do we do? And for us, since this is the brain at one and this needs to fall in that range but takes no LiveWire IDs.
Yeah.
Well, between one, there are then 200 LiveWire IDs, the way we break it out, that can be assigned to this engine. But this needs none. So this is dot one. This is dot 100. This is dot 101, 102, 103, 104, 105.
Now, on the one hand, I don't want to overcomplicate this. On the other hand, it's good to have a scheme so you know where everything is.
That's part of planning.
Yeah.
And if you don't plan this, if you go into this willy-nilly, it's going to get real difficult for you to go, okay, what was that? How did I got to go look this. When something and again, we've never had anything go wrong, but you plan for the worst and hope for the best. You need a fixed scheme to be able to do it.
I guess what I want to point out is that you can make your own scheme.
Yes,
LiveWire or Axier, they don't tell you what you have to do for your IP numbering.
Right,
but it's good that you point out because this console has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 modules in it now. It's got 6 IP addresses, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there are more to come.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Because the headphone control fader modules that are going to go on the desk that the talent will actually use. If you elect if you elect to use a headphone amp, but it doesn't have a volume control, that gets an IP address too.
Gotcha.
So you've got to really account for everything IP wise that is going to go inside of your IP scheme and know that does the item take an IP address or does it take an IP address and a LiveWire ID?
Okay.
So plan again, talk it over, try and break it, poke holes into it, make it right, plan some more.
You're building studios that are so much bigger and several in a cluster than I ever have. I've been building small radio stations for years. And so coming up with an IP scheme is still important, and we do, but it's really simple. I mean, you can write it on single sheet of paper. I think yours is probably on a spreadsheet, right?
Oh, a multi-tab spreadsheet, yes. Because remember, this isn't just about the studio.
Yeah.
This extends to two other departments. Right? Yeah. And so everything has to work together because if you get one LiveWire ID conflict or one IP address conflict, your network is not happy.
And it's you use the term LiveWire ID. And by that you mean like LiveWire channel number.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. By the way, in an AES-67 world, that would be a full multicast IP address.
Correct.
And so when you say, again, LiveWire ID, LiveWire channel number, for those of you who don't know, the folks at Axia a long time ago, when they invented LiveWire, they said, hey, we don't want to have people typing out full multicast IP addresses.
239 dot blah, blah, blah. Right.
Yeah,
right.
And maybe making a mistake, fat fingering that and making a mistake. So on any of this gear, if you type in a LiveWire channel number, it gets algorithmed behind your back into
a multicast address.
Multicast address, which it's easy to figure out. I mean, you can translate one or the other, but you don't have to. Just type in a channel number.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I know that this engine at 8.1, its program one output is going to be 8001.
Okay, yes.
Okay? That's it runs to 8.1, 8.0.0.1, and it has the first 200 votes, 8.0.0.1 to 8.1.9.9.
Because, you know, fully loaded up, that thing could have a couple hundred audio outputs.
Oh, yeah. The vMixer that's inside of it, 80 channels of LiveWire right there, right? That's 80 LiveWire IDs. So you really need to think it out, how you're going to use it, what you're going to do with it, plan for it, plan some more, try and break it, plan some more, then start pre-configuring it and testing it.
You're with all these channels, you're really trying to get your money's worth out of the ones and zeros that you buy.
With some of the things that we're going to do, it becomes necessary because using all of those vMix channels, we'll talk about when we extend the AOIP network from Rockland to California, so that I can call up sources from one site to another.
Let's saunter back toward the camera here. We're going to get ready for a break. If you've just joined us, I'm talking to Bill Jackson. He's the principal studio engineer for EMF, Educational Media Foundation,
right.
K-Love, and Air One, and we're talking about audio over IP. Bill's installing three of these, Axia?
Three Axia Quasars. It'll eventually be four
okay.
in this facility, okay. And then long-term five, but right now, three.
So these came in some big honking boxes.
They're crates, Kurt. This console weighs like 90 pounds. It's a boat anchor. I mean, it's just... It's amazing. Build quality. It really is.
We're going to be right back and talk about doing audio over IP across a nation from sea to shining sea and see how that works in the IP world. I'm Kirk Harnack. Chris Tobin is, he's not here today. You're watching This Week in Radio Tech, episode 502. Sorry. It's brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcasters General Store, representatives, and the place to buy products from Inovonics. We'll be right back.
The Aran 655 is the latest addition to the Inovonics family of rebroadcast receivers. Designed specifically for FM broadcast translators, also referred to as relay transmitters. The Aran 655 is unique as an uncompromising DSP-based HD radio and FM receiver combined with a powerful 3-band audio processor and dynamic RDS encoder. IP connectivity adds streaming capabilities, and a web browser interface gives you total remote control of the unit from any PC or mobile device. The Aran 655 gives you maximum flexibility for program sources. Select program audio from analog FM, digital channels HD 1 through 8, streaming sources, and analog or AES digital line inputs, all with assignable failover audio backup. The internal RDS encoder allows you to customize your RDS messaging. You can use incoming off-air RDS data, convert HD radio pad data to RDS, convert streamed metadata to RDS, or receive IP telnet data. Comprehensive audio processing includes gated and windowed AGC, a unique syllabic leveler, 3 bands of compression, and both wideband and independent HF limiting. Easy setup is achieved by using 10 factory presets and 10 customizable presets. The processor also supports dayparting, allowing automatic preset changes to follow different programming formats throughout your broadcast day. The front panel has an OLED display and jog wheel with intuitive menus for easy setup, advanced control, and editing for all operating parameters. The Aran 655 dynamic web interface gives you total remote control of the unit, from any PC or mobile device. A comprehensive set of menus includes a quick overview of now playing info, input-output control, processor options, RDS encoder, alarms and notifications, SNMP settings, and much more. You can also listen to the live audio broadcast streamed through the web interface.
It is still cool. The Aran 655 from Inovonics Broadcast. And you can get those and lots of other broadcast things, including everything you see in this room from Broadcasters General Store, EBS.website. You can call them at 352-622-7700. And yes, I really do have that number memorized. Been dialing it for 30 years or more.
Sounds like it.
Broadcasters General Store and Inovonics, thank you both for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack. We're coming to you from an unusual location, a dungeon.
My dungeon.
Is this
It rubs the lotion on its skin, or else it gets the hose again.
I was going to wonder if this – I'm going to have to process that. Is this is this where torture occurs?
No.
Oh, good. Okay.
That's well, good. Mental torture for me.
But you're temporarily in the space just so you can set these things up, right?
Yeah, this basement space will actually become storage, and it'll become hopefully a workshop. Mm-hmm. Because the upstairs space, we will have so many artists come in and out and tours for people to come see the things, yeah. To give a visual in-person face for radio, and see podcasting things and people coming into the recording studio that people see and cracking open consoles in order to yeah. repair things. It's just, so we acquired this in hopes to build a workshop area for me and for help desk person and for, a network switch person and things like that.
So, you know, what we should do is come back after you've got this stuff built, after the studios are done.
Come back however many times you want. I mean,
well, it's what is upstairs. And I wish I could show you this on this trip. I just have, you know, two little cameras here with me doing this live shot. But you've got a beautiful recording studio upstairs with a Grammy award winning?
Phil is, well, I believe, has two Grammys.
Two Grammy award winning producer.
Yeah. Full Avid platform, S6 console, typical live room, microphones for days. I mean, we can record albums in the room.
Well, I've seen some videos that I guess were shot in that room. Or were they shot at Phil's previous location?
I think those were shot in California, okay. But we're set up to be able to do that here.
So major recording artists mm-hmm. Come here. They've done interviews and recorded special
things. We have music that's going to be recorded within the next few days, as a matter of fact. Okay. I won't say who or what, but
okay.
Yes, it's fully capable to do that. So.
Wow. Well, I've been in Phil's control room, and wow, it's pretty nice.
Pretty cool, right?
Yeah. And then the live studio itself is every bit as a beautiful recording studio as you'd find anywhere in the Nashville area.
Yeah, it's nice. It's really nice.
Now, when I met you here the first time, there were, as you said, two control rooms here, mm-hmm. and they were pretty similar to each other, very nicely laid out, good multi-person radio control rooms. Mm-hmm. But one of those, you shed a little tear.
Gutted it.
You had to tear it
it's
out.
It's gone. Yep. So the use for this facility dramatically increased. And there is a need for us to acquire more space mm-hmm. within the building. We were fortunate enough to be able to acquire the space that's adjacent to the building, but there's no way to get through to that space. Okay? There's a recording studio there. There's a server room there. All the audio gear resides in there. The easiest place was through a studio. So we removed the studio to make an expanded technical room to keep more gear in because it's going to require it. Big UPS from Jenner that we installed. Of course, that's going to increase heat load, so we need more AC to go inside of it. We need more connectivity, which means bigger switches, and it grows exponentially. But then we've got a 48-inch hallway to be able to walk from the current space into what's going to be the new space that will have the two new on-air studios, the two morning show producer booths, the two Avid producer workstations, mm-hmm. some offices, cubicle area, that type of thing.
Now, for those who don't know, Franklin, Tennessee is a quaint and historic little town. We're south of Nashville, about, 15, 20 miles or so.
Right.
And a lot of wealthy folks live here. A
lot of artists in country music and Christian music live. I mean, if you go over here to the Frothy Monkey, you will see artists daily. Just sit there for 2-3 hours. You're going to see at least one or two pop in.
I'm friends with a fellow who's formerly a CEO of a major public company. There's all kinds of right. So Franklin's a swank little town.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
it's got charm.
Well, a charm, yes.
It's got charm.
And I've looked at home prices. You get to pay for that charm.
It's got charm.
It's got charm. So what I'm getting at is the building that you're actually in here that you've rented more space in where the studios are going, this building is kind of historic, charming, isn't it?
Yeah, so across the street is a historic Methodist church. Mm-hmm. The Methodist church owned this building and the building that we're next to. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, I could be wrong on this story. I think I'm right, but I could be wrong. The Methodist church was interested in building a new space to house their modern, their contemporary services. Mm. they sold the space that we're in and an adjacent Sunday school type room. To use the funds to build the new contemporary service sanctuary. Meanwhile, your traditional services are housed in the traditional historic building. Well, it makes sense that that would happen again. I could be wrong on that, but that's what I've been told. The irony of this whole thing, just as a point of personal privilege, when I was here originally building these things, my aunt happens to live here.
Oh.
And I brought her over. She's like, hey, I want to see what you're doing. So I brought her over. She's like, Billy, I used to bring my kids to Wednesday night supper in this room. I'm like, really?
So that was, and more recently, that was a restaurant where you're moving into.
They were trying that. There was some talk that I think like restaurants are going back.
Oh.
And so we said, well, we're growing. We need the space. Let's work out a deal.
Yeah.
And so we did.
Yeah. Good deal. Well, when we come back, when the studios are all built, we'll get to see all that. And we're going to also see the enormous generator that you squeezed into this tiny, it's right outside the window here. Yeah. You can't really see it, but just outside the basement window, there is an enormous Kohler generator. Mm-hmm. Did you have that thing helicoptered in or what?
No, we were originally going to crane it in, but they found a way with a pallet jack and a forklift.
Okay.
Be able to wheel it down the sidewalk one way, cut out a railing and get it in its place and forklift it to set it on top of the conduit after the electrical had been approved. And
that was one hoss forklift, I'm telling you.
It was, it was sweat that day.
I didn't help too much, but I observed you guys unloading your UPS system.
Oh, it isn't small, is it?
That's not small either.
Say it's something that fits in a rack. It takes up a room.
So with the load that you're going to have here, what kind of time will that UPS run? It's enormous, the UPS that they have here.
So we don't have it to its full load yet.
Yeah.
We anticipate that it would run about 15 minutes at its load. By the time we have everything up and running. And believe it or not, the thing that's taking up the most, that's drawing the most, is the recording studio. Because there's a lot of tube gear and amplification for the speakers. And, you know, it that's the draw. I mean, there's 9,000 watts in that room alone.
Okay.
Just in the control room.
Yeah.
So that's the draw. And then you've got the broadcast gear. And this stuff's so power efficient now, it's not generating much heat. It's not drawing a lot. It's much easier.
Tell you what, you suggested that we do a little tour here. Now, again, we're in a dungeon, a basement here, mm-hmm. where you're pre-configuring three audio consoles.
Correct.
And the gear that goes with it. So I'm going to hand you the microphone again.
Okay.
And we're going to see if we can get this camera stabilized. And I'm going to
now let me warn you. Okay. This is a dungeon. This is wiring stuff that will be taken out of here and installed inside of the studio, completely cable labeled prior to it going in, right size fitting cables and all that. That matter of fact, in this rack, so this is what we're going to call on air 6. Okay. These are the two mic nodes that will go in the room. This is the AES node that will go in the room. This is the GPIO node that will go in the room. This is the analog node that will go in the room. This power supply will actually go in the rack. This is the guys at Angry Outfit. It's a Bluetooth audio gadget that they have that allows the jocks to do, you know, Bluetooth phone calls or Skype sessions or what have you over their phone if they need to. All of this will go in the room and be neatly put in the room. But for now, this is not even connected to the base. The wire that you see is me extending the AOIP network from upstairs.
This is your AOIP?
This is it. Every source upstairs is now in the room all over this one wire. So I take this out every day and put that back inside. So this is very temporary. I come down in here, I work, and then I go home for the day. Even the power, it's all temporary. These are the supplies that will actually go in the racks for this gear inside of the technical room. So everything has a purpose. Everything fits to a design. It all has a plan, and it all works.
Can you spend a moment and tell me about the different Cat 6 cable that you have? Do we have an example of that thin stuff?
Yeah, this is one. This is one of the Cat 6.
Okay.
So we made a decision, again, planning, that we're going to base our entire facility on Cat 6A. So all of the core wiring is Cat 6A. All of our patch cabling will be Cat 6A. We then have also decided that when we install the gear, and it's all shielded. We have 14 Wi-Fi access points that are going to go in this, plus there's Wi-Fi all throughout the building. There's Wi-Fi coming from the Frothy Monkey. There's Wi-Fi all over the place, plus cell phones. I just don't want to take a chance in the facility of it interrupting, you know, causing packet loss because we've got interference on cabling. So we'll send shielded cabling to everything. All the patch cabling and the cabling between devices will be shielded. It is not now, but it will. All of this is Cat 6 cabling. This is Cat 6A, not shielded. And it's thick, and it doesn't bend well.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? This is Panduit's brand. This is Panduit shielded thick stuff. This is Panduit non-shielded 28-gauge Cat 6A. And then they make a version of this that is also then shielded that's just slightly thicker. So I've decided, I want to say I've decided, that's the wrong term to use. I made a recommendation, and then we decided this is the standard that we're going to use. And when we install it, that shielded cabling will run throughout. And that's how we'll install everything.
I'm going to make a quick move over here, big switch, and yeah. See if we can get a picture of that.
Okay.
Tell us what's going on here. Now, earlier you pointed out that, hey, this is temporary.
Right.
And I think what you're saying is, excuse the mess, it's not going to look like this.
I actually don't care about the mess. Right? But I do want someone to understand that what I'm doing, you know, it's okay to be messy and it's okay to make mistakes as long as you've got the room to try.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to spend a whole lot of money on trying to do stuff just to test it and configure it.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. I'd rather be messy and so forth. But when it goes in, you've seen underneath my furniture.
Yeah. It's nice.
Right? My racks are nice. Okay. So all of this is, okay. And it's temporarily run underneath the tables. This switch is a Cisco 3750 that has been retired. So we spent no money on this switch. It's probably a 7-8-year-old switch.
Yeah.
Okay, that we didn't spend any money on it so I could have a playground,
yeah,
okay, to
yeah.
configure all of this stuff. This is a new Pathfinder Core Pro that's going to go in the racks upstairs. This is an AES node that is the master clock for the whole network.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because we need to have timing. I've got a GPS Grandmaster clock that will actually issue PTP for the network that this will get time from and distribute Livewire clock to everything. There's a method and a madness. This is just an RM3. This is a cue speaker for one of the studios. And
let's talk about that timing thing just a bit. I want to make sure we get that covered before we take another break. Earlier in the show, we talked about you're going to be connecting different locations together. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of broadcasters, especially in Europe and especially in Australia, we've helped broadcasters connect in very real time facilities in different parts of the continent, in the case of Australia, together so that, and as low latency as possible, so that talent in different cities can actually interact with each other. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about what you guys are doing to connect your facilities together. You said you had Rockland. Have Indianapolis,
uh-huh.
and Franklin.
Okay. So currently, and as of about almost a year ago, we installed 2 iPorts at each facility.
Now, that's a multi-codec.
Multi-codec.
Box.
Eight stereo back and forth, or 16 one way or 16 the other.
Yeah.
Okay. And it has served us very well. Matter of fact, our main mode of transport for the Caleb Morning Show goes to Rockland for uplink over iPort.
Okay.
It goes one path down the MPLS private link, and the other goes out the public internet.
So it's dual path.
Dual path.
It'll reassemble the packets at the receiving end if it needs to.
Yep. Okay. Never had a packet loss.
Okay.
I don't say I've never had a packet loss. I've never had an audio drop.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
It's served us very, very well, and we love it. There was some talk when they were designing the AOIP network. Mm-hmm. How could we, quote, supernet this at some point in the future? How could we physically extend the network to Rockland, to Indianapolis at the time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. when the team, and I'm not a part of that team, so give credit where credit is due, there was probably 10 people, maybe even more, that discussed this. What's the way we could maximize so that when we plan the IP scheme, not only for Rockland, we need to take that into consideration when we do Indianapolis. Otherwise, we're going to spend who knows how long re-IPing and re-livewiring IDing everything at the Indianapolis.
So we're not doing duplicate IP addresses anywhere. Yeah.
Duplicate livewire IDs, sure. Yeah. So that thought process happened a long time before. I'm the guy that's blessed enough to actually get to execute it. And it took a lot of reading. It took a lot of talking. It took some great advice from Greg Shea. And it took communicating with a few people, because this isn't done very often. There's probably a handful of people that are going to do what we're about to do, to basically extend the network across a fiber link across the country so that a source here is available there and a source there is available here. Now, there's some technical things, some clocking things, the type of stream that all have to make that happen. Mm-hmm. We're about, three, maybe 4 weeks from actually lighting that up.
Yeah.
But to be able to do that is going to, it won't eliminate the need for the codecs, because the codecs are our backup once happens.
Sure.
But you could do what I'm talking about if you use, say, an iPort and some Pathfinder config. You could create a Pathfinder XY router if you wanted.
Sure. When you hit punch in this video, it calls up the right thing and sends it to you.
Exactly.
The idea is you have some limited bandwidth between cities when you have close to unlimited bandwidth within a given facility.
Right.
So the idea is, how do we either reduce the bandwidth with a codec or selectively choose what we're actually going to send from one place to another with a different kind of routing? And I was getting to toward two ideas here. You mentioned PTP clock. You mentioned clocking.
Mm-hmm.
And just to our moment of education here, no matter which over IP system it is, in the case of LiveWire, we have what's called LiveWire clock.
Right. And you have two of them, as a matter of fact.
Well, and any node can be a LiveWire clock, and they can automatically decide who's in charge, or you can tell them which one is the master clock. But whenever you involve AES-67 as an audio over IP standard, or if you just want to connect LiveWire in two very different cities, you can't carry clock across a slightly jittery network. So the idea there would be to use something that isn't jittery and very accurate, and that would be GPS. So you have a GPS-locked PTP clock, and you would have one at each of the, in your case, three different cities.
We'll do two.
Two, okay. So you'll have a PTP Grandmaster clock that's synced to GPS, one in Rockland, one here. And then on your LiveWire network, your LiveWire nodes can...
This master one.
That master one, yeah.
Goes and gets time.
Gets the time from
the PTP.
Exactly, exactly.
And it says, I'm the LiveWire master clock slave to PTP.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the one in Rockland's doing the same thing.
Correct.
So the point is, the idea of how long is 1 second, that notion is precisely the same in Franklin as it is in Rockland, not even a few microseconds of difference. Actually just a very, very couple of nanoseconds difference.
Yeah, I when I initially started this process investigating it over a year ago, I actually watched one of the This Week in Radio Tech videos where you had Greg Shea on.
Okay.
And you talked about PTP because he's one of the geniuses behind it, for crying out loud.
What's so funny? Greg and his team invented LiveWire clock. It's so similar to PTP clock. It's like, guys are pretty smart, aren't you?
No, and we took it a step further. Once that was the investigation, then it's a matter of getting the meetings, talking to him. Hey, what's the preliminary stuff? What I need to look at? And then some months go by.
Yeah.
And then we start doing it. And then in February, I came to the headquarters.
Cleveland,
and we talked about it again.
Yeah.
And we're now ready to do this. And you've been so supportive of trying to help us accomplish our goals, because at the end of the day, it's about acquiring and creating content that's going to further.
Precisely. Now, something I should point out is, if you're using between two locations, you don't have to have the two locations exactly clocked, because codecs will kind of make up for it.
Right.
But they do have to either repeat a sample or drop a sample to do that.
Right.
So when you do use codecs for backup, you are better served by having the clocking that's going into those codecs on each end to be the same anyway.
Yes.
So clock will help that situation. You almost never hear that audio anomaly, but you know it must be occurring occasionally when a codec drops, not a whole packet, but when it drops a sample or duplicates a sample because the clocks are running at different frequencies.
If you've ever been into the backside of an iPort, mm-hmm. and you look at the stream statistics, you see the packet loss and the number of samples and how many physical samples. And if you think something sampling a 24-bit word at 30 or 38,000 times, and you see those samples build, and you're like, man, that's some sampling. It's amazing.
I have some iPort stories to tell you, but I may have already told them on the show. But anyway, pretty impressive codec operation there.
Awesome.
But the point, you guys will be in a situation where you can bring live wire or AES-67 programming across a national IP network.
Correct.
And from one city, you can choose anything you want or anything you're allowed to in from the other city. So John's mic, bring up John's mic from Franklin.
Yeah, it's a tad bit more technical than that, mm-hmm. because a mic feed is a live stream source.
Right.
Okay. Whereas we're only going to send standard stream sources across the WAN.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So I have to convert that live stream to a standard stream to be able to send it.
Sure.
So it's not just as easy as, hey, I'm going to call up mic one. I'm going to create a second mic one that is available.
The standard stream version of mic one.
Hey,
that's
right?
A good point.
Because that's why I'm you have two clocks. You have the live stream clock and you have the standard stream clock.
Yeah.
So that's been the fun, is to try and negotiate that and plan out, how am I going to do this so that it's available and it's simple in both places to be able to call this up.
All very doable, but I'm glad you guys are actually getting it done.
No, you've been very helpful. Thank you.
We're talking to Bill Jackson. He is the principal. Studio engineer for EMF, K11, and Air One. And it's This Week in Radio Tech, our 502nd episode. I'm Kirk Harnack, and This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by our friends at Max Connect Wireless. And hey, I'm using my Max Connect right now. Feeds. So, Suncast, if you go ahead and bring the webpage up, that'd be great. Max Connect Wireless is a service. Yes, it comes with some hardware, or you can supply your own hardware, from my friend Josh Bone. Josh, for a long time, had wanted to supply a solution to his radio stations and his customers' radio stations so they could do live audio remotes or video from wherever they needed to. And you know what? The Wi-Fi hotspot provides from your cell phone, for example, that just wasn't reliable enough. You might get a good download or upload speed, but you know what? You're still contending with other users on the network, and packet delivery is not guaranteed when you're just using your 4G LTE phone to be a hotspot. And even if you go get a cradle point modem, but you don't have a special relationship with your phone carrier, you're in no better position. That's why Max Connect Wireless is what you want to do if you're a broadcaster, because every packet is going to get through. You have priority over all those other users, all those other schlubs using their cell phones. You have priority over everybody except first responders. And that means your data gets through. So Max Connect Wireless is a great way to get yourself some IP connectivity in places that are otherwise difficult to, or to provide backup. Say at your transmitter site, you can put a Max Connect Wireless modem out there, get some service, then program your router to normally use whatever your wired service is. But if it goes out, switch right over to Max Connect Wireless. You can also use it for remote broadcast. Carry it with you where you go. And if you get a version of this that has two SIM cards, like I do, you can choose between two different carriers. I have AT&T and Verizon built into my Max Connect Wireless modem. So check it out, the website, maxconnectwireless.com. Yeah, it's spelled funny, so click the link or make a special note of what that looks like. maxconnectwireless.com. This Week in Radio Tech, episode 502, and I'm in the basement here at K-Love Air One EMF Broadcasting in Franklin, Tennessee. And Bill Jackson, I'm really be excited to come back when you're done with this. What's the schedule for being done?
Wish I knew.
Oh, no.
You know how construction is.
We're really waiting
on construction. These consoles, this was the last one we fired up today.
Yeah.
It'll be configured probably by tomorrow.
You just pulled this out of the plastic 2 hours ago.
And it's half configured right now, and just waiting on me to do the rest of the work.
I was going
to
lament with you on getting the construction done, because you live in a town here where, let's just say, the building inspectors are pretty persnickety.
We've been blessed.
Okay, good.
We have been blessed.
Yeah.
Our project has been designed into two phases, uh-huh. and the first phase was the electrical to do the generator and UPS, and there was construction that had to go along with that, mm-hmm. and the inspectors have been wonderful for us, and they've been very accommodating. They understand what our mission is and what we're trying to do, and they've made sure we're doing it right, but they also haven't done what some inspectors can do other places, you know?
Gotcha. So they've been accommodating in doing it.
Very much so.
Okay. I remember this is the place where I took that picture. I posted on Facebook, this has been months ago, where I thought this would be a great name for a band or a really awful router. 1 hour firewall. Remember the sign?
Yes. It's still in there. So it hasn't been painted over, I can promise.
Well, I'm sure the building inspector, or somebody wanted the building inspector to know this is a 1 hour firewall. Yeah, which is a really bad name for a router.
What's funny, so true story,
yeah,
it's actually a 2 hour firewall.
Oh.
But they labeled it one, and I have no idea why. The way the wall's constructed, it's actually two. So
maybe they didn't have a sign for that.
Lost that two stencil. There you go.
So traditionally, at the end of the show, we leave our listeners and viewers with a tip. So maybe something that you have learned going through this stuff, setting up these consoles here in this dungeon. What word of wisdom might you have for our listeners about, hey, if you've got some consoles to set up, you may not want to do it. You may want to do it just like you're doing it here.
Plan some more, hand it off to somebody.
Yeah.
In the engineering world, we can get a little self-absorbed in our knowledge and how we do. I've learned the hard way. It's okay to make mistakes. Everything that we do, we confer our team, and I've had to make some suggestions on, hey, we need to change our live wire scheme where it still fits our model, mm-hmm. but it fits for what we're trying to do, mm-hmm. and it's going to have a little pain in it. I need you to poke holes in this. I need you to find the problems before we actually try it. So I've planned, and I'll submit it. And then people can bounce questions. And I tell them, if the baby's ugly, tell me the baby's ugly, okay?
Yeah.
Let's fix it now. Do you have a better idea? I don't know everything. I want input from you to help. This is a collaboration. Let's get the information. Let's get it right. Let's plan it. Let's pre-configure it. Then when it comes time to install, it's cake. Just go drop it in, plug in the wires, put the labels on them, walk out.
And for me, there would be a little bit of a saving grace in that. And that is, if something I did didn't work out well, everybody else signed off on it too.
Yeah, I've never approached it that way.
Well, as engineers, we're typically proud. We like to think we know everything. A lot of us do. Maybe you don't. God bless you. But I do. I like to think I know how to do this. And some of us are a little afraid to share our plans with others because somebody else might point out a glaring problem with it.
That's what's different about me. I want you to tell me the problem.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
Because I don't have all the answers. I want to know what you think about it. I confer with people both within the ministry and mentors that I've had. I've even called you and said, hey, what about this? And you'd be like, well, I don't know that that would work. Okay. You've been very diplomatic. I don't know that that would work.
Or maybe, well, watch that previous episode with Greg Shea.
Yes. Yeah. So if I would say if you plan, if you seek counsel, and you follow that plan, once you start pre-configuring everything that you're doing, mm-hmm. your job, once your furniture's in, once all your electrical is run, then you're set. Go drop the stuff in, take your cables, pre-label them, plug them in. 95% of the work is done.
Yeah.
It's just tweaks here and there. When this is done, I will share with you how this will happen. Everything here, the three consoles, the stuff mm-hmm. for the producers, everything mm-hmm. will be pre-configured, ready to go once the occupancy is secured for upstairs.
Yeah.
I have logistics planned of when my furniture is going to hit. I have the logistics planned for when the acoustic panels are going to hit for the room. so that they miss because construction dust and all that. There's a plan. We've planned and we're set. I have a guy that's going to fly in from California to come help me put this in. And we will do the two on-air rooms, the two morning show producer rooms, the two Pro Tools suites, finish out the tea room, that whole thing, everything. Walk away 14 days because of how we've planned it. Okay. Yeah, it's going to be a long 14 days. When you fly someone and they're sitting in a hotel and they're away from their family, they want to work and get home.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a plan. We need to plan. Gantt chart it out. Do whatever you need to do in order to make sure that the plan works and then go execute.
And obviously your plan includes milestones such that the consoles aren't dropped in and then some drywall is getting cut.
Correct. Yeah. Everything, particularly with cabling, because most people forget that when you run cabling, you run your cabling after your paint is done.
Oh.
Because many of the warranties on your cable, if they're painted, painted cables voids the warranty of your cable.
Good point.
Plan.
Plan your
Think.
Work.
Plan.
And,
plan.
And share.
Poke holes.
And
share it. Yeah. Have someone poke holes in it. Plan some more. And when you've got it and you feel comfortable, execute. So we're at the execute phase.
Bill Jackson, this has been an enjoyable hour and 10 minutes or so, but we got to go.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being had.
I appreciate you so much. Counsel, I appreciate friendship.
I wish I had a grand prize for you for being a guest on the show. I've got a pocket full of lint, and that's a 10 pounds of peat moss. That's about all I got.
Don't need anything. Just your friendship is enough for me. So
it's Bill Jackson. He's the principal.
Principal.
I always want to say that he's the headmaster. He's the principal studio engineer at Educational Media Foundation. You know them as K-Love and Air One. We're talking about audio over IP. Hey, thanks a lot for watching the show. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Hopefully next week, Chris Tobin will be back with us. And next week's guest is the amazing, this guy's multi-talented, way more than you and me combined.
Certainly more than me.
Paul Shulins. Paul Shulins is back on the show next week, so we look forward to seeing you. Thanks a lot to Suncast, the producer of the show. And thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.